This is Cincinnati Edition. On 91.7 WVXU, I'm Michael Monks. Look outside your window. The sun is shining longer. The birds are chirping. And the grass is greener. Spring is here. Is your garden ready? Your landscaping? Your flower beds? And will the still cool temperatures have a negative impact on your lawn? It's time for our monthly gardening show with our panel of local experts who want to make sure your plants are in good hands this season. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolz. Welcome, Sarah.
Hello.
We've also got the director of Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Hunninger. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
And Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist, Scott Berline. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning. Thank you.
We know you've got questions about your lawn and gardening needs, and if that is the case, please give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'll look for your comments and your tweets. Okay, so here we are. It's springtime. What does that mean for people who are outdoor gardening landscaping enthusiasts? This is prime time, right?
Stress.
No, I did get some horticulture therapy yesterday.
Did you?
Yes, we were discussing before the show. I went out and planted a hellebore. So I got that ready. But just be a little patient. You know, I started going around to some nurseries, looking at things. Inventory isn't quite there yet. Getting a little antsy, but just be a little patient. I'm starting to notice some buds of some trees swelling up, even a little peak of like some early blooming flowers. Yeah, it's around the corner.
Okay, so it's starting, but it's kind of that weird transition period where we'll get little blips of some nice spring weather, but this is the Cincinnati area, so we may see some cold temperatures as well.
And every year people worry about that and, you know, should I cover this or should I cover that? And I don't know, maybe I've gardened too long, but spring is going to be beautiful no matter what. Just enjoy it. Yes, some magnolias may get blasted. This or that may not flower this year, but enjoy it. It's gardening. It's spring. It's beautiful. Just enjoy.
Yeah. So, Peter, what should people be doing during this transition period?
Well, vegetable gardens, a lot of us have already started. We may have even started as early as June, July with planting onions. And so we've already have brassicas, your cabbages and kale and things, mustard greens, collards, already growing inside in greenhouses. And actually, later this week, I'm going to go ahead and put out the first round of them at the Price Hill Community Garden. And so, and then other things you do is like with a home gardener that's not, you know, operating or trying to get the jump on the season, you know, now's a great time to go up. If, as long as you can work in your garden beds without compacting them because the soil's so wet, start getting up, pulling out those weeds that are popping up, raking them out, smoothing, maybe building your beds and getting ready for planting.
Awesome. Well, here's the good news. Last month, with Sarah was here and we had some other guests on as well. We talked a little bit about my first attempt to have plants in the house. I managed to murder a weeping pussy willow, but I talked a little bit about my money tree, which was still alive at the time. It's still alive now. So another month in the books for the money tree, which I'm excited about.
All
so
right.
A little more
cha-ching
sunshine for that. I looked over the planting calendar for Cincinnati from the Farmer's Almanac, and it looks like some of the indoor seed work that needs to be done probably should have been started in March for a lot of these vegetables. I'm looking at broccoli and Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, these types of items. What does that mean for those of us who don't know what that means? If we're killing regular plants in the house, what does it mean to start indoor seed stuff during March?
Well, like I said before, it just gives you a start on the season. So you start them indoor and then later you transplant them out when it warms up a little bit. Now, some seeds, it's still not too late to start your tomatoes and peppers. It's right on the edge of the time. But you don't want to plant those out till after the frost date of May 18th because they're extremely tender. And certain things like soybeans, you can't really plant until the soil warms up in late May anyway because they're very, very sensitive to frost.
If we've got some two eager beavers out there who might start planting now, which types of plants or vegetables, gardening items, are most vulnerable to this lingering frost we experience in our area?
So the cool season plants, kind of what Peter was mentioning, like some of our root crops, like our carrots, they can be planted out, our sweet sugar snap peas, any of the leafy greens, spinach, lettuce, kale, we can grow some of those. Watch the temperature. If it does get below too cold, you can put a frost blanket over them. But kind of to piggyback off what was already discussed, growing, starting seeds indoors, you can really pick and choose what types of varieties and cultivars that you're looking for from some of these seed catalogs. And I like horticulture therapy. All my windowsills are covered with, you know, trays of seeds ready to come up, and my things are starting to sprout. So I got my little girl involved. Hey, you want the pretty flowers? You know, start your zinnias. And she gets to choose the color that she wants, and we bird watch, so, and go out, and so it's fun to get the whole family involved.
And there's nothing like seeing little seedlings germinate mm-hmm. in March. It's snowy, it's minus whatever outside, and you've got little bits of life in your basement under fluorescent lights starting to grow. Ornamentally, you can't really do a whole lot as far as planting right now. You could put some pansies out. Basically, that's it. Even really hardy perennials that you would maybe find at nurseries, they're not hardened off yet. They've been in hoop houses. So it's too early to jump the gun on anything ornamental for your yard, except for maybe pansies.
We got an email from Beth. She says the daffodils are already coming up. Is there any way to save them if they're vulnerable to any of the frost?
Case in point, they're going to be fine. I've never seen daffodils damaged by cold.
Well, that's good news for Beth. Yeah.
They're pretty determined to survive.
Yeah. 513-419-7100. If you've got a question for our experts here, let's go to the phones. We have Tom on the line. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, what's your question or comment?
Yes, I'm dealing with chipmunks and moles, too. But with chipmunks, is there a really good method to get rid of chipmunks? Those guys are nibble at the tomatoes, just take a bite out and say, oh, well, we'll go on and nibble on another one.
Tom, you can never trust the monks. What do you guys think?
That probably wasn't a chipmunk. That was probably a squirrel.
Oh.
Yeah, and what does... Or did you... You have eyewitness here?
Yeah, actually squirrels do it too, rabbits do it too, but I've seen the chipmunks do it also.
Oh, that's interesting. That's good to know.
All right, Tom, we'll hang up and get some questions or some answers from these folks about how to deal with these folks, these little critters. What do we do?
Well, one of the things that people get frustrated with is they take one bite out of each fruit, and that's because they're not wanting to eat the fruit. They want the water. And so you'll see that really in July and August very heavily that'll start be taking place, and that's also the big peak time for tomatoes. One thing, if you really have a serious problem with this and you're just having no success, we had that situation at a garden once, and what we did, we just started planting cherry tomatoes. And they didn't – either they didn't bother them or they just took the whole thing with them. And we didn't – and there were so many cherry tomatoes we didn't notice them missing.
Very clever.
Yeah, but we had – that was one way to get around it with tomatoes.
All right. Good suggestion.
A diverse landscape where you have predators around helps too. So if you can do anything to encourage snakes and fox and raptors and whatever –
Yeah. And also, they are thirsty. So, you know, wildlife management individuals, they suggest putting out a bird bath or something where these critters can take a drink. You know, to be honest, I haven't seen a reduction in activity. But, you know, I always make sure that they, you know, our wildlife has something to drink as well.
And Scott, you're from the Cincinnati Zoo. Is there a resource there to learn more about chipmunks or squirrels?
It's not really.
No.
The squirrels are a scourge for us. They love the bulbs that we plant. You know, every now and then one of them will wander into an exhibit they shouldn't and almost pay the price. I've never seen one pay the ultimate price for that mistake. But one thing, we don't have to deal with deer because we've got the 8-foot fence around the entire zoo. So that's not a problem. But squirrels are...
A little bit of
bad news. And then for the bulbs, we have to cover our beds with plastic netting over winter. Otherwise, they'll be decimated. So, and we've got the fattest squirrels on the planet.
Yeah, they're nuts.
Sorry. That's all right. 513-419-7100. If you've got some questions as well, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Helen on the line. Hey, Helen.
Hi. I like to have flowering plants in hanging baskets. And I can't keep the birds from nesting in them. I've tried putting plastic forks in upside down. They use it, you know, to weave around. And I have lots of pinwheels. Sometimes I'll put three in each basket. And they just, they're already hanging around my balcony.
So you're using forks almost like, and they approach them like it's some kind of prefab home on there. They're just building upon what you place in there?
Exactly.
Oh, goodness.
And pinwheels are pretty, but they don't seem to bother them at all. They just go around them.
Okay, so how do we keep birds from Helen's hanging plants? Helen will hang up and let the folks here answer.
Scrambled or fried.
Yeah.
I guess if you're feeding them too, you know, sometimes I get comments, well, I have deer coming in my property, you know, and eating everything. And I'm like, well, are you feeding the deer? Well, yeah, I like to see them. Well, there you go. So are you do you have bird feeders up? Are you feeding the deer? Are you inviting them into your landscape? Well, then they're going to find, you know, a tent or not a home to nest in. So kind of think about your landscape as well, about that. Bees the same way. Well, I don't want bees in my landscape for various reasons. They might, you know, sting my kids or something. Well, do you have, you know, those types of plants that encourage our pollinators into our landscape? So just think about that.
Very interesting.
And the other thing I can kind of think of, I mean, the idea of using netting and something defeats having a hanging basket because you don't see it, but you could try doing something like using that bird netting and sort of rolling it and putting it around the edge of the inside the basket so that it kind of creates a surface that they'll get stuck in if they try and land in it. That could possibly persuade them not to nest. But I do know, like, morning doves. I don't know if that's one of the birds she's getting. I mean, it's once they decide they're moving in,
they're there.
You just either take down the plant, and even then they'll probably find somebody else on your porch to live.
How about like a figurine of another bird? Would that scare off, like, I wonder?
I don't know.
Or,
you know, coyote urine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've never had this one come up. Some type of, like, visual deterrent.
Well, you know, it's interesting. At home, we had this red cardinal that would come around, a male, and peck himself to death, bloody, on a car door, our car mirrors.
Uh-huh.
And so one of our tenants went out and put a rubber snake over her rearview mirror on her car, and, he stopped coming. So we all had to go get rubber snakes because
very
they just moved
clever.
On to the next car. So you can try that. But the other thing to think is plant selection sometimes it can be helpful. For instance, Scott was talking about squirrels digging up bulbs. They don't mess with daffodils. And I personally like daffodils, so that we've given up on tulips at home because it was just unsurmountable.
So try to find a plant that may not appeal to the birds.
Yeah, there's a lot of different hybrids, varieties of daffodils, too, where you can get some color variation. They have the little petite ones now, and very nice.
So what are your goals for your gardening this year? What are you doing to prepare for spring? What's bothering your situation? The number is 513-419-7100. We've got more from our panel of experts and your calls as the monthly gardening show continues after this very short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're doing our best today to make sure you are prepared to have the best garden and lawn possible this season. The monthly gardening show continues now with Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist Scott Berline. The number is 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll find your comments and your tweets as well. The phone lines are blowing up, folks. Let's head back to the phone lines and see what kind of questions await. We have Leslie next in line. Hey, Leslie.
Hello, how is everybody today?
Just fine. How are you?
Good. So my question is, I have a miniature Japanese maple that I've had. It's done really well for 10 years. And then last year, it didn't leaf out. It just looks like it passed away. So I'd like to replace it with another one, but I'm not sure what caused death of the tree. So I'm a little hesitant to pull it out and put another one in if I would run the risk of losing that one as well. So I need some advice or a plan here.
So what kind of conditions was the maple in? Was it full sun, full shade?
It would get, let's see, it would get morning sun, maybe early afternoon sun.
Did the soil tend to stay wet?
Not really. Mm. It really seemed to be fine for 10, 12 years or so. So I'm not really sure what happened.
They're pretty tough, reliable trees. One thing I wonder is if maybe the roots were girdled. It takes a tree normally 10 years to die, and it will do so sort of unexpectedly if the roots are circled. You know, when you plant a tree sometimes and you take it out of the container, the roots are all circled. And if you don't break those out and sort of spoke them like the wheel of a bicycle, they'll continue to circle around and eventually just kind of choke off the tree. And I suspect that may have been it. There's not a whole lot that kills Japanese maples other than maybe sitting in water.
Yeah, I really don't think that was the issue. So you think I'm okay to try again, just kind of pull this one out? And given what you said as far as the root system, be more aware of that when I put the new one in.
That's what I would suggest, yeah.
And examine, when you lift up the plant, examine it, and not just visually, but also smell it. You know, I like to smell the soil of which it came out. Does it have like a earthy smell, or does it smell, you know, kind of potent, you know, and kind of look at that soil wetness or dryness? Because even though, you know, the first few centimeters may be dry, well, below is a different story if it's sitting in like a water bowl. So,
I would just like to add that normally I wouldn't go back in with the same plant that is one that mysteriously died, but hey, I love Japanese maples, you know, they're tough. They're easy to grow trees that do well. So I would suspect it was something like mechanical type thing with the roots.
All right, Leslie, thanks so much for the call. Hope this was helpful for you.
Well, there's one thing I'd like to add to that also is that when planting trees in Ohio, whether it be a fruit tree or an ornamental, small to medium in size, is that our soil is very heavy. You know, it's got a lot of clay. So people dig a hole about the size of the pot that the tree came in, and then they'll fill the remaining space around it with compost or loamy soil. Then all of a sudden what you've done is just created another pot, because that clay, now those roots will penetrate clay, but when you're backfilling a hole for planting a tree, it's good to add maybe 20% compost to the existing soil. And then a lot of time we do what we call piercing or aerating the soil, radiating it out from the hole, and you can use a gardening spade and just force the tines into the ground, rock them back and forth a little bit, then pull the spade straight up. And what that does is create holes in the ground for debris to go in and break down, and that provides space and some air and some easier soil for those roots to grow out. And it's really important, like Scott said, is if that roots are radiating in a circle, you have to disperse those out, because that the tree will strangle itself.
One other thing too is on this is a lot of times, and I'm not saying in this instance, but a lot of times Japanese maples are front landscape plants around the foundation planting, as we call it. So around walkways and things like that, also places where we lay down salt in the wintertime. And so boxwood, for example, is very sensitive to salt. So we have to think about the salt toxicity, if you will, or burn that can be a result of using salt in the wintertime. So which Japanese maple is sensitive to
that.
Yeah,
that's a good point. A very good point.
Yeah. So think about that. You know, and Extension does have, and probably the Zoo and Botanical Garden has, publications and information on salt tolerant plants, it be from your foundation plantings all the way up to, you know, urban landscape tree plantings that are both for pollution and salt tolerance. So just keep that in mind.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. Next up is Betsy. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're doing well.
Michael, I'm enjoying your new voice on the radio.
Oh, Betsy, thanks so much. It's nice to have your voice join us today.
Thank you. My concern is, how do I know what to cut back now in my perennials and what I should have done after they flowered? I have a, I don't have to pronounce it, Weigela.
Weigelia.
Weigela, okay. And then I have butterfly bushes and I have grasses and things like that.
Well,
should I be cutting those back now or...
Yeah, it's that's an interesting question because, you know, with I always try to cut things back as late as I can because those are good winter habitat for a lot of the pollinators. So you may have egg cases of some of our beneficial insects in some of this material. But, you know, grasses you want to cut back about now. This is about as late as you want to go. Cut them back really well. Maybe just take those grass blades off to your compost pile without – mashing them down, and maybe if there's pollinator eggs in there, they'll hatch in a few more weeks. Butterfly bush, you want to go ahead and cut back. Weigelia, that's a is that bloom on new wood or that's on new wood? So, do you really need to cut back your weigelia? Usually, you don't need to so much.
Okay, so I just watched that. Okay.
Yeah, and basically, the rule of thumb on any shrub is to cut it back after it blooms. So. You know, if you need to do it, a lot of pruning happens that never needed to be done in the first place just because people think they need to do something. But, yeah, I'm sorry, go on with your question.
I just wanted to know how much of the butterfly bush do I cut back?
I cut it back down to 6 inches, you know, or so.
Okay.
You don't need to. You know, some of the older ones get pretty big on their own, and you can just let it you know, they may have died back on their own over winter, and then you cut them back. But if you want a smaller, more compact plant, go ahead and cut it back to pretty small.
There you go, Betsy.
Okay.
We appreciate you listening in for the call. Thanks so much. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's go to Chuck now. Hey, Chuck.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Fantastic. I turned off the radio, as suggested, so I missed the last part of the conversation about the lady with the flowering... you know, the pots and keeping birds away from nesting.
Yes. So you've got a bird problem as well, then.
I have. Two words will solve it.
Uh-oh.
Troll dolls.
Troll dolls?
Oh, really?
get yourself a big troll doll. With the hair is important, but it's the eyes. The
very cool.
Which is worse, birds in your pot or a troll doll in your garden?
Well, you know... Look at it as, you know, a fanciful kind of, you know, planting. But I have robins that keep trying to put a nest above my porch lights because it's, you know, under the soffit and it's still protected. Every year they come back until last, got a troll doll, put it up there. They come and see that and they take right off.
Chuck, we really appreciate that advice. We'll make sure that we pass that along to the previous caller. Thanks so much.
What we were discussing after the initial one is, you know, Peter brought up a really good point is, why do we want to, you know, get rid or scare off these birds or other wildlife in our garden?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's if you enjoy nature, you know, maybe the bird and nesting and then hatching chicks is, you know, it can be part of the process.
So it can help. And we've also got a lot of messages and calls from a couple of different listeners, Mark and Phil. They want to know how to get rid of moles. So it's kind of the same thing. You're saying that while they may be nuisances in one way, they might be helpful in another.
Well, if we think about gardening in partnership with nature and some permaculture principles, I mean, the moles aerate the soil, so they serve a function. Now, it can be a problem in some areas in terms of people tripping or twisting their ankle or something. And so it's not always going to be the situation. But if they're just in rooting around in your garden beds or an area of the yard that you're not really going to very often, it's actually performing a benefit. They're also eating grubs and different insects. They don't eat plants. You know, a mole. I mean, I got called out on chipmunks and tomatoes, but I've never heard of moles, you know, do not eat, you know, they're not herbaceous. So
That's very cool. So troll dolls to scare away birds. I'm telling you, is there anything that old relics from the 90s can't solve?
Yeah.
I'm living proof of that. For
hairspray.
Sure.
Well, I think you're talking about a generational thing. I would say those would be relics from the early 70s, late 60s. So.
Oh, really?
Depending on the early damn doll trolls.
I wonder what a lava lamp would do.
But you know, I have heard of people using taxidermy eyes to keep out in animals out of pots and stuff. So I guess that's the same thing. They had those plastic
the equivalent
eyes.
Of one of those portraits where the eyes follow you around the room.
Yeah. Or wiggly
the Mona
eye.
Lisa. Just put Mona Lisa out there.
The number is 513-419-7100. And boy, the phone lines are busy today. Hope you'll call in. More gardening and landscaping tips are just ahead with our experts and your phone calls. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Is your garden ready for the new season? The monthly gardening show continues now with Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturalist Scott Berline. Give us a call to join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org. Facebook or Twitter will work for us as well. Let's go back to these very busy phone lines right now. We have Donna on the line. Hey, Donna.
Hi there. How are you?
We're doing well here. What's your question?
Well, I have a shady backyard, very small, and every year I get what I call Creeping Charlie. It's it's an invasive plant that I don't like, and I'm sure it could be a ground cover, but it gets this really pretty yellow flower on it, but I really don't want it in my yard, and I don't know what to do.
Okay, I think we might have lost. Are we still there, Donna?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so your question is, how do we get rid of Creeping Charlie?
If that's what it's called, yeah.
Okay, guys, what do you think?
Perseverance. It's a kind of a running plant, and I think it probably spreads by both runners and seeds. You just got to stay on top of it. You could go ahead and use a broadleaf herbicide, and if you were to do that, this would be the time of year when it's actively growing and it's chilly, and that's when it really likes to run. Personally, I think you can just get in there with a trowel and work at it. It's a little tougher if it's in your lawn than if it's in your garden bed, but perseverance, really.
Hang in there, Donna. That's the advice. Hope
but the question I have is, could she possibly talk about lesser celandine?
I wondered, because yellow flower isn't right for...
It's white.
Creeping Charlie is a blue flower.
Yeah.
Or blue. Yeah, blue. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, blue.
Yeah, yellow, lesser celandine comes out, and then what will happen, it'll die back after it blooms, and then it will be like as though it's not there.
Yeah.
But it spreads by seed, by these nodules or rhizomes. It's tracked by animals a lot. It's a very difficult plant to get rid of. I don't think that they have found that Roundup or any of these products are...
I'll disagree. I have killed it with Roundup.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, you just have to hit it on a cold day because that's when it's actively growing. So, you know, a day like, you know, in the mid-30s or 40s, early before it goes to flower. I've had really good success with that.
Okay. Non-chemical approaches, which are not as successful but can help, is that you can, like, cover it with cardboard and put wood chips on top of it and smother it. But the problem is often this is coming up in people's yards.
All right. Well, thanks for the alternative, because last month we talked a little about Roundup as a solution to various problems as well. We did get some pushback from a few people
Absolutely.
Who don't like that. But I know there are Roundup enthusiasts and Roundup opponents as well.
And just remember, the soil is a wonderful storage of all these weed seeds. So every time you disturb your landscape, you know, planting new crops or tilling, if that's your method, you're just... you know, bringing those weed seeds up. And so, you know, eradicating the flower before it goes to seed is one way. But then if you're going to go in the fall or the spring and plant your annuals or remove things, then you're just, you know, lifting those weed seeds right back up. So just be mindful of that. That's one advantage of a no-till system, is helping reduce the weed seeds from germinating.
Back to the phones we go. We have Tim on the line next. Hey, Tim. Hi.
Hello?
Hey, Tim, you got a question for us?
Yes. A month ago to the day, on February 27th, I planted sugar snap peas in the raised bed, and we've had a lot of rain since then, and we've had a bit of a cold snap since then. And this morning I went out there with seed packet in hand getting ready to replant. And lo and behold, a couple of those sugar snap peas are emerging from the ground. What's your thought? Do you think they're going to be joined by others, or should I figure those are just a couple that have survived and I'm better off just taking the trowel and planting another couple rows of sugar snap?
Well, I would say that given the amount of rain and the cold snaps we have, there's a very good chance that the other ones just didn't germinate. The good news is those seeds aren't very expensive. And And so, but I would just go ahead and replant. Now, anything that's coming up, leave. Because one thing some people do with peas is they'll, you know, plant them very early and knowing that not everything's going to make it. And then they plant, it's sort of like a succession plan. You plant the second row or a second batch within the same row and then just go ahead and keep going. But that's what I would say. But I would go at this point, I would just go ahead and replant.
My troubles are the rabbits. So as soon as I start seeing them, then they disappear or I see the bite marks. So that's my trouble. I'm going to try again this year and maybe do some chicken wire around and making sure that I leave enough underneath so they can't burrow themselves underneath the chicken wire. But that's my enemy.
There you go, Tim. We appreciate the call so much. 513-419-7100. If you've got a question for our experts here today about your garden, next in line is Nicole. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm sure this has been asked before, but how do I control and or destroy honeysuckles? They're going crazy and... Yeah, I probably made a mistake by trimming them back, thinking that would control them. But, of course, my husband told me I just made it worse.
Uh-oh.
So what can I do?
Nicole wants to get rid of honeysuckle. This is a relatively common question. So what's some good advice for this situation?
Well, again, if you're not afraid to use glyphosate, you can go and cut it back and then paint the stump with half-strength solution of Roundup or whatever glyphosate. You're using a very small amount that way, and it will kill the plant 90% of the time. If it doesn't, you go back and do that again. You can also spray the resprouting growth. That uses more, and you're more apt to get Roundup on other plants that you don't want to kill. So that's an issue. If you don't want to use Roundup or any kind of herbicide, you just got to keep going at it and eventually wear it out. Cut and wear out the roots eventually.
All right.
And salts do not work in my experience. So that's an organic option that some folks believe works on stumps, but honeysuckle just, it doesn't care.
And smaller plants you can pull.
Yeah.
You can pull pretty easily, actually.
And I think that's the trick with honeysuckle to remember is that it's a border plant that establishes itself often on edges, and you'll see small plants. But this time of year and when it's wet like this is actually the perfect time to go out and pull those young honeysuckle saplings. They have a fairly shallow root system. And so I've taken, plants with a 2-inch diameter and just taking them and rocking them back and forth, backward, forward, side to side, and then just yanked them out of the ground. Then, like Scott said, using a chainsaw and cutting them as close to the ground as you can, and then you can just keep, every time something green comes up, clipping it off. If you don't want to use a chemical, we'll discourage it, but you have to stay on it. But the big thing is get them while they're little. And so even if you dig out a bunch of big ones, you've got to be diligent going out twice a year and checking the site and anything small that's coming up, yank it out.
There you go, Nicole, 513-419-7100. You know, I remember honeysuckle from my childhood going to Papaw's house in Louisville as a kid. My brother and I loved honeysuckle. It always smelled good. We'd pull the blooms off and taste it a little bit, and it was good. But this is an invasive plant.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. The beauty of it, though, I worked at the Lexington Arboretum when I went to UK there, and that was one of my big projects was removal of the honeysuckle in the back of the woods along the walk across Kentucky. And it was beautiful, all the winter just, bundled up, removing honeysuckle. But then in that spring, the wildflowers that came up because they, year after year after year, they've been, overgrown with all this honeysuckle, so they weren't able to thrive and get the sun that they needed. So the wildlife just came back. All the native trilliums were sprouting up, some of the wildflowers. It was just beautiful. So there is the pot of gold at the end.
And the transformation is remarkable.
Yes.
Where you can have a woods utterly choked in honeysuckle, and then you remove it, and you see the contours of the land, and you see the beauty of the forest. Drive through Indian Hill. Indian Hill has removed a lot of honeysuckle, and you can see these these areas of woods that are just gorgeous now.
Because the honeysuckle's
gone.
Oh, my childhood memories ruined.
Yes.
All there are other options.
Okay, I look forward to those.
It is a fun. A standing honeysuckle is a lot of fun for a kid to climb, and I got to say.
513-419-7100. If you've got a question, let's go back to the phones. We've got James on the line. Hey, James.
Hello.
What's your question for us?
So we had an accidental dumping of salt brine from a hand crank ice cream freezer onto a flower bed.
Oh no!
And I was wondering about how to remediate that. Should we remove the soil, or should we just water it and try to wash it away, or what kind of method?
All right, James. So it looks like they had an accident with salt brine. Is it salvageable?
To be honest, I would feel more comfortable calling the soil and water conservation of your area because, I don't know if it's considered then a hazardous waste material, how it leaches or what reaction it does have with the soil.
If the soil is high quality with a lot of life to it, microbial life, I feel like it would leach out pretty quickly. If it's heavy clay that doesn't receive a lot of runoff. Worst case scenario, is it? You could just try stuff, get the salt off as quickly as you can and plant things and see what happens.
I would remove the first couple inches of soil.
Yeah, maybe the first couple inches.
And then find some place to distribute it, maybe around the stump of a honeysuckle. do that. But I think then amend the soil with good organic matter. Yeah.
Does that help, James?
Very much.
Yeah. All right. I don't really think it'll be a hazardous waste.
No, I don't either. No,
okay. Yeah, I don't think that.
Does the county extension office help with soil testing or anything
like that? Yes. Yeah. So in Kentucky, Ohio is a little different, but and I can touch on that. But in Campbell County, anyways, we have free soil samples to residents of Campbell County. If you're not in Campbell, call a local extension office in northern Kentucky. And Ohio also offers soil samples, but they are where, Peter?
Well, that's at Hamilton County Soil and Water Conservation District. That's Holly Utrata Holcomb. And there is a small fee for this testing, but it's very, very modest and really worthwhile doing. Now, they don't test specifically for salt. That's for nutrients and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you were to call them, Holly would be an excellent resource to answer that salt question or anything about soil.
We got an email from Beth, and speaking of grass and soil, she says she's having trouble growing nice grass. The lawn has a lot of moss in it. Is there something she could do to the soil?
I love moss.
I do, too. Yeah, I would have people bag it up and bring it to me. I do love moss.
My lawn is mossy, and I'm loving it. And I just love the look and the feel.
So Beth shouldn't be concerned?
Well, it's a matter of taste. It's not harmful. The proper thing to grow in the soil conditions she has.
Okay.
If she wants to grow a better lawn, I would just aerate that soil and rake it out and overseed. But personally, I'd stay with the moss.
There you
and
go.
It could be a little bit too shady in the area too. So if she has a large tree or a neighbor's tree, sometimes thinning out the tree canopy to allow more light penetration could help. That is not the only solution, but aesthetically, it's beautiful in my opinion.
There you go, Beth. Yeah. Just bag it up and bring it on over to Scott and Sarah. They'd love to have it.
And this goes to the same thing with the animals. It's like it's what your land wants. Mm-hmm. And so at a certain point, you want to do a baseline study of your property and think about, what wants to grow where. And if you want something else to happen there, but the land wants something to happen, then you may need to alter something, like Sarah said. A tree needs to be limbed up, or the soil makeup needs to be changed through aeration or adding different materials. But I would try and collaborate. Amy Strauss, who's on the show sometimes, has a website, the 10th Acre Farm, I think. And she has a lot of she works out of the permaculture principles, and she'll have some very interesting ideas for solving these problems and then also identifying them as an asset, possibly.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. This is the monthly gardening show, and it continues now with Campbell County Extension Office horticulture agent Sarah Stoll. Say hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Homeadow Song Farm, Peter Hottinger. Hey, Peter.
Hi, hello.
And Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist Scott Berlon. Hey, Scott.
Hey.
The number is 513-419-7100. If you've got a question for us, you can also email talk@wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Paul on the line. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I have what's probably a pretty basic question, but I'm a first-time homeowner and moved into the house last July. We're in Cincinnati. It's a pretty small front yard, but it was completely overrun with some kind of wide grass that grew like a weed and it grows like 6 inches or better per week, probably.
Nuts edge.
There's some kind of clover, and then another plant that almost looked like wheat that would come up pretty often. So I put down some weeding feed at the end of the season last year, and it killed probably 90% of the yard, with the exception of what I believe is the wide blade grass that's popping up in certain sections. But so my question is basically, I want to reseed the lawn, I think. So just looking to figure out when to do that. I like the look of bluegrass, but I didn't know if there was a certain grass to have a better chance of success here in Cincinnati. And then, you know, what I could do going forward to keep the weeds and crabgrass at bay.
All right, Paul, we're going to hang up and let the folks answer here. Thanks for your call.
I'm a reluctant turf guy at best. I would go back in with not with a bluegrass because that requires a lot of water. But I would use a tall type fine fescue. As for if 90%, if most of what you have is dead already, and I don't know what the thick bladed grass is, but it doesn't sound desirable. You might want to just finish that off with a round of Roundup. And I know I'm sounding like a Roundup enthusiast. I'm not. I use it reluctantly, but it is a good tool to have in the box sometimes. But go back in with the seed. Don't try to make sure your seed gets good soil contact, and let it go. And you know, I don't put a lot of effort into my lawn at all, and it shows. My lawn is full of everything, and I like it that way. So I think one thing we need to do as a society is reconsider what we want out of our lawns and whether a perfect lawn is worth the time and investment and the environmental issues. But yeah, I understand when it gets so bad that you need to do something. And you know, if you're halfway there already, I'd finish it off and get started new and run with it.
Keep in mind, you know, be your lawn or, you know, a shade garden or you know, an area to control to attract pollinators into the garden is understanding the soil and the environment. So looking up and looking around and seeing what buildings or things that could possibly shade that. So Extension has a plethora of information, including publications, and we have a table of kind of when is the best time to do certain applications, and in particular about the lawn. So you're a little late on the ideal time to plant seed, grass seed. A tall, fine fescue is recommended, a blend of that, and we have recommendations of blended tall-type fescues. So keep in mind of that. Also, different times to, if you want to fertilize, certain applications of different herbicides and fungicides, should that ever happen. So keep that in mind, that there is a time and place for all of those, both synthetically and organically. And just do your homework, and we do have a chart for that, so you can do it yourself. Yes, you can hire someone to do that, but there are the tools there, and as long as you follow those steps, you can do that. One note I would like to add are those weed and feed type combination. Just be mindful that you want to eradicate particular weeds, but you're also feeding them. So I would recommend splitting those applications. If you're trying to control something, do an herbicide-only application followed by the correct timing of application of a fertilizer feed. So
I think we've got time for one more call. Let's go to Danielle. Hey, Danielle, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing well. What's your question for us?
So I've got about 5 chickens, and they get quite a bit of sunlight in their run. And I'm wondering if you guys have any suggestions on a vine or some plants that I can plant on the east side of their run that, you know, if seeds or fruit fall off of it, you know, wouldn't be poisonous to them, but it could provide shade and maybe a little treat for them.
All right. How do we make Danielle's chickens happier?
Well, the thing to remember about chickens is that they, people say they're not particularly bright, which I disagree with, but one thing I do know, they're incredibly industrious. And they will dig up and scratch up anything you plant. So you'll probably need to plant on the outside of your fenced area, which is, that's not a problem, but you just have to be mindful of things growing into the fence. But that also can provide a situation for a raccoon or other animal to crawl over the fence and get inside. So keep that in mind. So something that's it can be a perennial, but something that grows up and then dies back during the winter, you know, like cup flower, things like that can be good because it'll grow up and then you can cut it back. And you can actually take the stalks and throw them in there and they become habitats for insects and the chickens like to scratch through it. So we found cup flower to be, you know, pretty effective.
How about like an ornamental grass?
Okay. Well, ornamental grasses, yeah. Yeah, okay. And that would be, you know, so your primary goal is to get some shade to them. And then, but it, when you grow anything up a fence, if a vine or something, you'll run the risk again of something can call up or it pulls it down.
Yeah.
Good luck with those chickens, Danielle. Hope it works out. Yeah. All right. So we did get an email from Nasrin, it looks like. She cut her honeysuckle down to the stumps, wrapped them in black plastic bags, and that killed them. So there's one way to handle it.
That's an interesting
thing. And try it this weekend.
There you go. Before you guys run off today, I want to make sure that you get to announce what's going on in your respective organization. We know we have Zoo Blooms coming up.
Starting, I guess, what's the date today? That first Thursday in April, whatever it is. So we'll have Thursday nights, free music, and hopefully a lot of tulips. All through April.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, there's some nonprofits in the first weekend of May or first Saturday of May be having plant sales. So Turner Farms Veterans Program sells tomato and pepper plants, but Granny's Garden in Milford also, they sell perennials and as well as pollinator and different kinds of perennial flowers, as well as the annual vegetables. And then the Civic Garden Center has their big extravaganza, the plant sale, and they have about everything under the sun. But it's also a good place to pick up vegetable plants, and which I'm a big advocate for. And then Turner Farm, check out our website. We still have a lot of gardening classes going on, and we have work and learn sessions at the community gardens throughout the neighborhoods. So you can contact me via Turner Farm or peter@turnerfarm.org about those opportunities.
We'll make sure that we have the links on our site. Yeah. And Sarah, what's happening in Campbell County?
All types of educational classes, evening, nights. Don't forget about our environmental center out in Alexandria. Our office does have 2 locations. And also, Farmers Market will be starting up in some locations in April. So that's
perfect.
Exciting.
It is the season.
Mm-hmm.
My thanks to Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist Scott Berline. Thanks to all of you for being here. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Today's technical director is Dave Shermer. Find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. When the Archdiocese of Cincinnati presented a new employment contract for educators forbidding public support of the, quote, homosexual lifestyle, administrators said there would be no impact on the classroom. But a new documentary premiering this week argues that isn't true. We talk with the filmmakers. Plus, the new leader in Highland Heights, Northern Kentucky University President Ashish Vadia. Tomorrow at noon on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.